The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, Tub Gang, it's Gabby. If you tuned into episode 2, you got a taste of our interview with David McGee, the screenwriter for the 2008 film Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, aka Amy's first bathtub performance. Here's our longer chat with David. He explains, among other things, how to write a scene in which kids are pulled into a magical realm through the bathtub in such a way that it doesn't look like they're being drowned. Enjoy! So, Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day is Amy's first bathtub scene. To us, it seemed very vintagey, very like Marilyn Monroe, ingenue bathtub. Tell me about how you got involved in it, the process of adapting, and how something like that was greenlit, because we have a vague sense that we don't really see movies like Pettigrew anymore. At least they don't get a theatrical release.
I agree with that. I think a lot of those smaller budget comedies and period films have a lot more trouble these days getting made than they did back then. It was kind of at the end of the heyday of the Miramax film era and Focus Features, which is what Miss Pettigrew was. Those were popular back then. They made their money back. It was a certain size budget, and they could get a guaranteed return because people wanted to go out to movies like that. They were less concerned with being tent poles at every turn. I got involved with Pettigrew because it was the second film that I ever had made. My first film was Finding Neverland. There's a whole long story I could get into, but I won't, about how I ended up writing my first film. But part of the story was a woman named Nellie Bellflower had a script by a playwright about James Barry, the man who wrote Peter Pan. And I had just written a play that she had produced. And I asked her what she was doing next. And she said, I'm trying to figure out how to make this into a film. I've never made a film before, but I thought it'd be great. But Alan doesn't feel like he knows how to write a screenplay. And I said, well, I'll do it. And she said, have you ever written one? I said, no, but I'll figure it out. And it was one of those, she paid me a dollar and she paid Alan a dollar. And suddenly we were writing a film and Miramax picked it up and I got a chance to get it made. No one knew who I was. And I had never, written anything big enough that anyone had any associations with me besides Finding Neverland. So everyone thought I was British. So for the first 10 years of my career, I got offered every play or every film based on a British Victorian novel about playwrights involving kind of this magical realism, flights of fancy thing. People talk to me about maybe writing a thing about L. Frank Baum, who wrote Wizard of Oz, and Lewis Carroll. And it became very predictable, the kinds of things I was being offered. And Nellie came to me with this book, Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, saying that her British producer had brought it to her and wanted to know if I wanted to do it. And I said, Nellie, I'm not British. I don't want to do it. She said, but it's really good. And I resisted reading it for months. It was sitting on my table and I was I was so hoping that I was going to write something that was written by a guy from Flint, Michigan, that I kind of avoided it. And then finally I read the book and I liked it a lot. And it was frustrating because it is a screwball comedy, which is not made very often at all. But this was a throwback in a nice way. And the book itself read at the kind of frenetic pace that the screenplay and the film ultimately, it moves along. Mm-hmm. And each scene represents another hour in her day. So it feels like it runs kind of continuously. And the bathtub scene is in there. So that was not something I invented. It just was in the script. And it was made by Focus Features, which was one of those smaller independent film companies. One of the funny things that happened in getting the film made, set up at Focus, was Winifred Watson, who wrote the book that the film is based on, was, when we were doing this, she was in her 90s, and everyone said she was a lovely woman. She's still around. She was very excited they were making the film. But then it turned out that she had already sold the rights to the film three times to studios back during two times before the war. And then everyone forgot. And then she sold it to Universal Films just after the war, and it never got made. And Universal owned Focus Features. So we were about to do it, and Focus called and said, we already own the rights to this. We've already paid for the rights to this twice before. So we got very lucky because it was Focus who wanted to do it and Universal who had the rights.
I was wondering, speaking of war, this is where Gabby rolls her eyes because I have a conspiracy theory about tubs and other things, but they have everything to do with 9/11 and what came after. And so I was wondering, what makes this movie get greenlit? And I thought, well, we're a couple of years into the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. People are used to it. They want escapism. But this is a movie about people trying to live their lives while a war is going on, essentially, in the background. And so I was wondering, was that familiar to the writing? Was that familiar to the production? Was that kind of the subtext that thought, well, people will identify with this? They're already tired of this war thing. I mean, it was not a war at their doorstep, but it was something that was in the news every day. So I wondered if that was like just another way to do a war, you know, a war adjacent movie without having it to, you know, you have one scene where it's like the war's here, but otherwise it just looms.
I hadn't thought about it in those terms at the time, but I don't think there's any question that after 9/11, for me, at least, I wanted to write something that had some escapist feel to it. I wanted to explore a story that made me smile, that made me forgive people their foibles and let them live and all of that. And the theme of that comes through in the sense that faced with war, you do have to live for the day in front of you and ahead of you. And I think that is truly a part of that story, and it gives it a nice grounded feel. Otherwise, I mean, screwball comedies are fun, but they can get pretty old pretty fast if you don't feel like there's something real grounding them underneath that. And the fact that Pettigrew herself is desperate at the beginning of the film, genuinely like on the breadline desperate, and, you know, losing the only job chance that she had, and then getting the chance to step into this kind of magical world where nothing matters and everyone's happy all the time, and drugs are thrown about like they're nothing, and, you know, there are no consequences to the gangsters and the craziness of it all. It's a fun form of escapism, but it also kind of, it makes you feel good to know that this is a woman who hasn't been given any of these things in her life, and now she's getting her chance for the day. So
yeah, the escapism. Interestingly, I won't spend too much time on this, but one of the things we found in our data, when we were looking at, Gabby looked at every Best Actress nominated movie, all the Oscar movies, 490 or whatever they were.
Something like that.
Yeah. In addition to, like, there's a data set of 1500 movies that we were looking at, but then we also looked at these. And we found that, you know, tub and shower scenes do a number of things throughout the years, but starting in the 2000s, they spike. And in the 2000s and in the 2010s, you have the number of tub and shower scenes for Best Actress nominated roles double or more. And then it stays up for about 20 years. And then in 2020, it drops off. So one of the questions we have that drives kind of the back half of the series is why is that happening? And what does it all mean? And one thing, again, this is my, it's got to be war theory, is, you know, maybe there is something escapist about the tub. With this war going on, everybody's like leaning more into like inwardly facing domestic dramas, comedies, you know, whatever it is. That sort of idea of like the tub as this protective space in a way, at least from the perspective of like writing a story about something that's not so outward. And I think, yeah, that escapism that you're talking about really resonates with my theory.
Well,
anyway,
I think the tone of different bathtub scenes can vary wildly, you know, from something that, you know, is escapist bubbles, the kind of the frippery of the Pettigrew scene where Pettigrew is standing in there while she's in her big bubble bath and then draping her with a robe and commenting on how kind of beautiful she is and all of that. And that's fun and has that kind of, I mean, the biggest thing about that character, Delicia, is her absolute lack of self-consciousness or sense of indecency or impropriety in any level. I mean, it's not that she's indecent, it's that she has no concept of it, and she has this wonderful kind of openness. So that's a very different feel than a bathtub scene where you feel as the viewer as though you are a bit spying in on someone's private moment, which most bathtub scenes, and this is more thought than I've ever given to this, I just want to be clear.
Oh, we're going to drag you deep into this, David.
Most, I would say most bathtub scenes are more, and I suppose there's a voyeuristic quality to even Delicia's bathtub scene, but most are more prying in on a private moment, which makes them very different in feel from, you know, as far as Delicia's concerned. If 5 men had walked in at the same time, she'd be chatting with them as much as Pettigrew, you know, so it's not that same feel of peering in through a window at someone's private time.
Well, and also just I imagine this came through in the writing, and certainly it translates to the direction itself. Like you said, the beginning of the movie is frenetic. There's a lot of quick cuts. Amy does not stop moving. She's moving in every scene, moving around, kicking this guy out, kissing this guy, going over here, doing that. And then the tub scene is like hero's journey, classic moment where it's like, this is a moment of pause. It's also the moment where the kind of the theme is stated, the quest is stated. You have to pick between 3 guys. This wise person's going to help you out. And so in that context, it seemed like this is just a really classic like journey to the cave, except the cave is this incredible tub. In the cold serpent mind of the writer, were you thinking like, this is where we're going to put all the thematics are going to be right here?
It's interesting. I think that as a writer, I'm always happy for those moments where you earned a pause, where you earned a moment to sit and reflect. I think it's such a luxurious scene. You know, it's such a marble tub, bath, bubbles, all of this, that you can enjoy being in the location, but you can also sit still for a moment and talk without feeling like you're trying to shove theme and lines in under when no one's looking, you know. It gives you a moment to sit in the scene. And I always think of that, for those moments, as being earned, because when you start a film, the audience doesn't want to sit down and hear all your themes or your, you know, here's what I want you to be aware of and think of on a larger scale about this, or here's the journey of the film. I want to earn that. And you get to that point. And so I think it is a wonderful setting for that. I wasn't picking the bathtub for that specific reason, because it was in the book. I couldn't tell you now how much of that scene that I wrote took place in that tub in the book and how much I pulled in from other things. But I knew that, and I'm always aware that, you know, those moments where you're trying to pull things together and let the story breathe a little bit are valuable, you know, so use them as much as, you know, as well as you can.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Casino, America's social casino.
What is interesting, because their deeper chat about the guy she's choosing between, her stakes, mm-hmm. her situation, mm-hmm. her problem, does happen after she's out of the bath. So there is like mm-hmm. a sense that the bath itself is its own stage for something else. Mm-hmm. I think that jives mm-hmm. with what you've said so far. I mm-hmm. wonder... I mean, could you speak more to that? Like, why aren't we showing women contemplating their lives, their problems in bed? Why is the bath more dynamic than that, more effective? Like, is there something else we're doing? You know?
I think of most bath scenes as being contemplative and quiet. You don't usually have someone in the room with you, and you're not usually chatting with them. You're revealing something about character through seeing a person at a vulnerable moment. When you talk about having a scene in bed or something, I suppose you could be in bed with someone else and you can reveal anything you want. It is an intimate place, but it's a different kind of intimacy.
Gabby and I, you reminded me, because of the time period of Pettigrew, Gabby and I have just mm-hmm. been talking about and spend a lot of time talking about Claudette Colbert, DeMille, mm-hmm. the famous tub scene in Cleopatra that's not actually Cleopatra, it's actually the sign of the cross, but everyone thinks it's Cleopatra because she's in milk or whatever. So we're like, that's wild, because that's the same era Pettigrew is set in, you know, like just across the pond, that's happening while, meanwhile, in Hollywood, they're doing this giant thing. Were you a student of like those old, the kind of the old DeMille and that kind of pageant?
I've watched a lot of Philadelphia Story is... for my money, one of the best films of that era. And it's not screwball comedy, but it has that quickness of pace and lightness and sharpness that I just love. It's slightly later than the Pettigrew era, but I'd have to look at the dates. I don't remember. But I love that. That's the kind of film that I love from that era. Those big epics, I mean, DeMille... to some extent, I was less interested in the films from that era that were trying to go epic big than I am with something like It Happened One Night or Philadelphia Story.
That's what I think, again, is interesting about the structure of Pettigrew and kind of Life of Pi, another one you did, which is like, it's just mm-hmm. adjacent to these astronomical events that are going on in the world. You know, obviously, Life of Pi mm-hmm. is its own kind of epic, but, you know, you get the sense of like, it's a quieter version of a thing. It's like, well, what happens in the next room over from the war or from the disaster or from whatever? Mm-hmm. So you just feel that tension that's always kind of there. Is it going to break through the frame of the story or not? And just knowing it's there sort of adds something sort of special to it or familiar or
I couldn't agree with you more. And actually, I am attracted to those stories where something bigger is happening in the next room or in the world around them, even if it's only... And it's not just to ground the story, which I did say in the case of Pettigrew, but if you want to tell an epic story, I think the mistake that a lot of epic stories try to tell everything about everything that's going on, and they don't get into depth with any certain characters enough that you care. But if I care about one person who happens to be going through World War II, I can make what's going on around him as big or as small as I want. And I still care about that person. But if I try to tell everything about what happened at a certain battle, okay, it's a history event, but I'm not getting into who these people are or caring about them. So
you kind of get the coldness. I mean, this is getting a little farther afield, but it's making me think of Chris Nolan as an incredible director, but with stuff like Dunkirk, You know, mm-hmm. it's about the spectacle. I mean, you sort of lose the resolution on the people as much in favor of.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed Dunkirk. I mean, that's a difference in style too. I mean, I think Christopher Nolan's an incredible director, but he does have a coldness to his style, a very clinical, you know, style, which is just, I mean, it's not who I am. It's not, you know, so I can enjoy that, but I don't know if I could write that if I wanted to, because I like getting involved with the characters and feeling something for them and, you know, not getting schmaltzy. I don't want that, but I like feeling like I understand what's going on with a character and when they're hurting, when they're winning, you know, that sort of thing. And certain directors, I think Soderbergh's another great director who just does not want to go beyond a certain emotional point with his characters. Total respect to both men. It's just not the kind of thing that I'm capable of doing. It's not how I respond to stories.
Nolan's doing The Odyssey. I would like to see the David McGee version where it's like all the stuff happening in the next room while Odysseus is crossing the Mediterranean. Just a bunch of chats. How's your goat? You know, whatever it is.
How's your goat?
Good.
I'd like to ask about Mary Poppins Returns, because that's such a fun tub. It's kind of like we were trying to align it with our buckets, maybe a little like a sci-fi bath, like it transforms you. A lot of those are like healing things. So this is obviously magical realism, as you mentioned. But tell me about making that fantasy, writing that, making that, you know, the special effects of that.
Sure, absolutely. So that film was a very different experience, and that bathtub was used to a very different end. Where that came from, it was Rob Marshall and the director and the producer, John DeLuca, who, as I recall, came to me and the Mark and Scott, the composer and the lyricist, and said, we want to do a scene where we go off into an adventure with the kids on the high seas. And, you know, it's going to be fantastical. And we want it to just be her teaching the kids to not believe any of the nonsense that adults have been, you know, putting into their heads about how things should be and reality. You can go off and do that. And I said, well, yes, but Mary Poppins wouldn't actually say go off and do adventures. She would say that's all nonsense. She wouldn't. And that was how the conversation evolved. And then, of course, Mark and Scott went off and wrote the song. And somewhere in there, it was Rob and John's idea to have them go and they have to clean up after their bath because they've made a mess of themselves. And then the bath becomes a portal into this whole new world. And the actual bathtub, that scene was built in a studio on essentially a second floor. And, you know, he walked up the steps to get to this bathroom set, and the tub had a literal slide in it. So once you got in the tub, you let go and you just slid down to the first floor, which was awesome. It was very cool to watch. And
did you get to do it, David? Did they let you do it?
I think they would have let me do it. I don't think it ever occurred to me. Now I feel bad I didn't do it. But during rehearsal, it was just watching the kids go down the slide. I did ride, by the way, though, they had a Ferris wheel in one of the final scenes, and my family and I rode the Ferris wheel in between takes, which was pretty cool.
It is fun to think of the ways in which, like, fantastical tubs sort of do align with, like, horror tubs. People being pulled down into another world.
Well, yeah.
It's so fun. This household object can be, either, you know, deeply fantastic
And we played with that a little bit. We had to make sure there's a fine line between it being fun that a kid gets pulled into a tub and disappears and you're killing them, you know, or you're drowning them. And we really did. We went back and forth. I mean, there was a lot of debate. Is it funny if, like, so first the first kid just jumps in the tub and goes, wee, and disappears. And the other kid goes, wait, and dives in after them and then disappears. And there was a fine line between, you know, the kids drowning or the kids being pulled in by the other kids. So we've had all sorts of like little qualifiers on the lines so that it was, you know, and then after made sure we put wee as they went in the first time, not ah, they're killing me.
I can see the studio notes on that one. There must have been some bad.
Yeah.
Do they feel less dead in this version?
Yeah.
They definitely
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all bets are off when it comes to sci-fi. You know, you have like Star Wars and Dune, the back to tanks and the weird mud where they're healing. Inception, you know, it's kind of used to like wake him up, which is sort of like transportation. Yeah, there's a lot of tub as portal, tub as healing. But it really is the transportation. The tub is the most stationary object in the house. So sure. It's the last thing that you would look at and be like, you know, that's a portal to another world. Or at least it's no, you know, if you think about like people looking at the toilet that way, maybe, which was only been in Trainspotting, you know, something like that.
Usually oh, right.
Like, no, the tub is the thing. What, you know, top of your head, you're on the psychiatrist's couch. What's tub mean to you? What does shower mean to you? How do you use them? Why?
First of all, I think they're different. Shower is very, just on a basic level, I think a shower is very functional. Now, of course, it can turn into psycho or whatever. A bath is much more slowing down, reflective, stripped away kind of feeling, unless it's one of those kind of more luxurious spa bath kinds of things. It is a time alone, I think of. I think what they're generally used for is revealing vulnerability. I saw the Demi Moore film you just mentioned, The Substance, and those shower scenes, as I recall, and I was not focusing on them at the time, but they felt very vulnerable. They're shot from above, down, and it's about the feeling of aging and being uncomfortable with your body. And then I don't know if later there is a scene with the younger version of her shot the same way. So I think vulnerability, first and foremost. But I think that with the shower, it is less reflective, less glamorous, just this is me kind of at my raw beginning of the day.
Yeah. Hmm? There's no wrong answer. No.
No, I know. I'm not sure if I got any more to explore on that one because I'm not I have not quite thought as much about this as you have, I don't think. I wrote another tub scene. I forgot. It's in Lady Chatterley's Lover.
Oh, that's
and
right.
It's Clifford. Yeah. Clifford, the husband, is in the tub. I forgot about that, but that is ultimate vulnerability. That's what made me think of it. He can't bathe himself anymore, and she has to do it for him. It's anything but romantic. It's about being laid bare. It's about having to face your infirmities. To me, that's one of the more painful scenes to watch in that movie, you know, because it is, there's a lot of vulnerability with all the characters, but that one is kind of feels raw.
As the person who first put Amy in a bath, like, this is huge for us. This is really big. It's really big. What makes her a good tub actress, do you think? Because she's in a lot of tubs. People are putting her in tubs a lot. In the last half of her most recent projects, she had a bathtub scene or a shower scene.
You know, this is news to me. Now that you've said it, I realize it. I don't know what it is that prompts us to keep going back to tub scenes. But I mean, in the film that I did with her, she has this wonderful openness and ease in her manner in that tub in such a way that she just kind of floats through that scene. I mean, that is, you know, the highest compliment. She's wonderful in that scene. And as an actress, she really is able to find those little things that make each character unique. And I guess you just need to get her back in the tub to see how she's going to handle it with each of those characters. That's all I can figure.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.